This week, financial market volatility ratcheted up ahead of next week's big FOMC rate decision. It's a pleasure to be back with you this weekend. Your host, Chris Waltzek here. We've got another Muy Grande size show. The market's across the board. Through a tantrum this week, from U.S. equities to precious metals, crude oil, even the dollar, it was a rough week. Joining me with his take on the volatility, David Gerwitz, Managing Director at Nenna Research. Their work indicates that the gold and silver markets could be at an important focal point. He shares several of his market signals, as well as a favorite stock pick, and they see ominous signs of war, global war, on the horizon. Then Louis Navalier returns to the show. He says it's time for investors to increase their gold and silver portfolio exposure by as much as 50%, and for the first time in a while, he's turned somewhat bearish on U.S. equities. That's after nearly 6 years of mostly positive talk on domestic shares. He shares several of his favorite stock picks, nearly 10 of them, Costco, COST, being one of his favorite opportunities, which typically have low relative price-to-earnings ratios and solid dividends. Then Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest big report. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with the market weather recap. Heavy weather hovered over the New York COMEX exchange for the second week running on U.S. dollar strength amid hawkish Fed governor comments. Gold gave back only $10, though, finishing at $10.76 an ounce. Silver lost 66 cents, about 5%, finishing at $14.15 an ounce. The XAU Gold and Silver Equities Index dropped less than a point, finishing at 255 at 4740. But black gold fell about $4.50, 11%, finishing at $35.62 per barrel. Well, the top story moving the markets continues to be the upcoming two-day policy-setting Fed meeting, slated for, you guessed it, December 15th and 16th of next week. Fed governors are widely expected to raise rates for the first time in nearly a decade, with over 81% odds now, that according to the Fed Funds Futures contract at the CME Group. Nevertheless, the greenback fell sharply for the second week running. Precious metals bottom line. Although the precious metals markets are sluggish ahead of next week's meeting, even during the 1970s, gold and silver experienced explosive moves higher amid big rate increases, so maybe a bit too much emphasis has been placed on the upcoming rate hike. In addition, the bloodletting in the greenback indicates indecision, I think, in the markets, as seen by the huge Bitcoin rally this week. My Alpha Stocks newsletter portfolio added the Bitcoin ETF well before the remarkable advance in our paper trading TDF Ameritrade account. Actually made about $10,000 this week just on a 500-share position in the Bitcoin ETF. People, I think, though, are unnerved a bit about too much uncertainty in the market. So I think gold and silver, still advisable portfolio insurance. Moving on to Wall Street. Clouds reappeared over the New York Stock Exchange as weakness in the energy shares and nervousness in the junk bond market rattled investors. The Dow finished at 17,265, off about 578, 3.5% for the week, while the S&P 500 finished at 2,089, off 80, 3.8%, and the Nasdaq fell 208 points, down 4%, finishing at 49.33. Well, the top stories moving the indexes were worries about the health of the high-yielding bond market and the 11% plunge in crude oil affecting the shares. On Friday, U.S. traded crude oil fell 3% on the heels of news that the International Energy Agency noted continuing supply glut in the sector. And as we know, too much supply, lower demand, lower demand, lower prices. Crude oil plunged following the report to $35.60 a barrel, which pushed the energy shares down by 6.5% for the week. Adding to worries on Wall Street, news that a high-yield bond fund or junk bond fund was limiting investor withdrawals amid bankruptcy-related liquidations sent reverberations across the financial markets worldwide. Investors in Third Avenue-focused credit fund will likely have to settle for less than their deposit amount over a series of months. High-yielding exchange-traded funds fell abruptly, with the ETF down about 2%. That's the lowest in 5 years, and 11% so far for the year. Bottom line on Wall Street. Well, the seven-component sentiment index fell sharply into the extreme fearful level, indicating some panic on the part of investors. In addition, the CBOT VIX and VVIX indexes registered the highest closes since the summer micro crash, suggesting follow-through selling is a possibility next week. Will this be a simple case of sell the Fed jitters and buy the Fed rate hike fact? The Fed holds the cards here. I expect a quarter rate point hike next week, and how investors react? We'll just have to wait and see. Coming up after the break, more Gold Seek. We'd like for you to stay with us right here. Welcome back, David Gerwitz.
Chris, always a pleasure to chat with you.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you back with us. And, you know, we were talking before the show about our mutual affinity with Dr. Stephen Leeb. And I thought it was interesting that you noted that, you know, your work there with your crack research team at Nenner have come to some of the same conclusions or tend to from the technical side of the equation that Dr. Leeb comes to on the fundamental. Tell us more.
Well, let me first say, you know, thank God you and I have a deep relationship in a lot of other things, math and science and history and stuff, which we'll talk about off the show because no one wants to hear it now. Again, I'm a JD, MBA, CPA. Charles Nenner is a medical doctor who studies quantum physics in his spare time and came up with a system to predict markets while he was in medical school based on repeating patterns. And as you know, it's generally right. No system's always right, but it's usually right. And so we therefore consider it being that it is technical, that it's all based on math and analysis of patterns, since it works, it must be fundamental. But people like to say, ah, it's technical, and they want to dismiss it. But if it's right, and we've called certain amazing calls, which we'll talk about, and some we've missed, which, of course, I'll talk about, too, to show the honesty. So when I see somebody like Dr. Leeb, who is, I think, you know, he's a genius and tremendous writer and thinker. He says certain things which we see from our stuff, and he explains how he gets there. It makes us feel better because we don't know why when cycles are topping, and I'll explain a little more, and it's a top, then something happens. We don't know the reason other than the cycle top, some reason that the news shows will come along and say that's the reason it happened, but in fact, we think it was because the cycle topped. And then Dr. Leeb will explain in advance, this is going to happen because of these reasons, so it makes us feel better that what we consider fundamental is, in fact, technically based fundamental, whereas he gets there fundamentally. I'm sure he uses technicals, too. Pretty much everybody does. I don't see how you can't. But it just it makes me feel good because I have such respect for him.
The technical side, it's kind of like the Rodney Dangerfield of the industry, isn't it? I don't get no respect. You walk into a major trading floor, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, if they even have them anymore, right? And all of those analysts, all the traders, anybody who is worth their salt, they're using technicals.
Absolutely. Charles was at Goldman for 15 years. Right. When I met him, we went down to Goldman. We walked into the trading room on the 20th floor downtown, and they gave him a standing ovation. He hadn't been there in a while. He did because they knew his system worked, and that was it, you know. And so you're right that everybody uses technicals. I will add one piece to this conversation because we're going to talk about stocks, bonds, commodities, and currencies. Gold was up 11 years. I know you guys like to talk about gold, obviously. It was up 11 years, right, running, and it's been down for four, right? And it hit its 19 peak. It's been down. Right now, we called this bottom recently. We said Newmont has an upside target of 2105. GLD needs a close above 102.85 to give a buy signal. First upside target's 104.75 and then towards 115-85. And let me give you what we said about gold and silver the other day, just so we can go right to the focus of gold and silver, because I know that's something you guys occasionally think about. Gold's back in a buy signal. First upside target, gold 1109. Traders who are long, keep a tight stop around 1060. We get pretty exact. Daily cycles project a high by January 6th. Newmont gave the expected buy signal. Keep the stop at 1875. This is our three-time-a-week research product that we send, and I'm reading it to you. GLD gave the expected buy signal. Keep the stop at 102.45. That was gold. Silver gave the expected buy signal. Needs one more update to calculate an upside price target. Keep the stock at at 1405. So this is how precise we get based on math, but it's no different than crude and stocks and bonds and other things. We just think the math patterns in everything follow the same patterns. This happens to be stock. This happens to be gold. This happens to be this, which I'll talk about now, as we've done in the past. So We don't know why. We just knew it was time gold would bounce, and it did. And everyone will say, great, here, copper, gold, and other metals are near a projected low, and we expect a nice bounce now. Newmont looks better than GLD based on cycle. So that's the start right away.
But then what about the folks who need a story?
Well, I always say, because I have been interviewed about 100 times, your next guest will give you the reason we're not that smart. Next guest will tell you the reason, and it may be right. I don't know. We're smart enough to know what we don't know. You know, that's wisdom. In Hebrew, the word wisdom is made up of two words, the power of a question.
Remember, Wittgenstein, who is also of the same faith, pointed out that which we cannot know, we must not speak of. We must pass over. That was the basis of his Tractatus.
That which we don't know, we try and figure out, but we also need to know what we don't know. And that's a big thing to be able to say. For example, just we're talking about gold. How do we have these levels? How do we pick levels in our system? How do we have, for instance, on Friday, let's go to stocks. I'll do an ADD story for you because then we'll switch. Stocks on Friday, it bounced Friday, remember? Even though equities are on a sell signal, but we wrote here, could be a bounce. S&P dailies are up to the 10th. There's another bounce. However, the VIX is on a buy signal, and we had said at the beginning of the year we'd have up and down moves all year, which is what happened. We don't think it's going to hold. Yesterday, before the market began what it's been doing the last 2 days, we wrote, quote, U.S. equities remain in a sell signal. While we saw the bounce, we're not convinced that it'll have much follow-through. S&P dailies are still up for a few days, and then down to December 24th. However, closed below S&P 2060 futures, first signal that the bounce is over. Now, it's gone down the last 2 days. What we've told people is stay out, you know, and it was the right call, but not everybody does that. They don't know how to hedge. They know, you know, we've got clients with $200 billion, $100 billion. They're not day trading. They're not, you know, hedging. Everybody uses our stuff differently. So it requires at least a mindset to understand that we're trying to provide longer-term and short-term all in four sentences because no one has attention span to read more than 4 minutes. That's another thing that I've learned. We have thousands of clients. We have clients all over the world, 50 countries, hedge funds, family offices, sovereign wealth funds, traders, et cetera. And everybody's looking differently, and everyone has a different time frame horizon, and they have 5 minutes to read it.
Again, we were talking about Wittgenstein there for a moment, and he eventually turned his mind onto logic. And one of the biggest problems he had with logic was the ambiguities and inconsistencies. And you just said, you know, people can barely stand to read technical information more than just a few minutes, but you can look at a chart and really get 100 pages worth of economic analysis, can't you, very quickly?
That's a great question. I look at a lot of stuff. We look at a lot of stuff outside of our own stuff. And we feel, this is what Dr. Nenna came up with, and I'll tell you the story again, how he came up with it, which is fascinating. Everything's embedded in price. Price is the voting pattern, the psychological state at the end of the day of everything. So whatever the price is and how that moves, we analyze cycles, target, Elliott wave, stochastics, wedge analysis, trend line analysis, daily, weekly, monthly, all based on price, because we think price contains all the other stuff everybody looks at. Okay, so that's why all the other information you're talking about that other people use, and there's some very good stuff other than ours. We're not the only ones. And I see, and people get to things differently. They somehow come up with different parameters that become the basis of their systems, and they're very good. But still, you still have to, you know, at the end of the day, there's still the human touch. It's not just the black box. We don't press F3 and F10 and we have an answer. You know, I wish we did. It would be great. But you have to think. And we combine, you know, when you go to the doctor and you sprain your foot, is it sprained, broken, fractured, contusion? You look at a lot of x-rays. That's what we do. Our email, which I just read 20% of. I read the S&P, I read the stock, the gold, I'll read you the VIX. VIX closed Friday below a level of 15.15, technically canceling more upside, but our overall technical model, we have given one more chance as long as there's no close below 13.45. Europe, we nailed also. We said the DAX and FTSE came near our downside targets as expected. DAX came down 802 days from the day we called the top at 14.435. This morning, we see a rebound, however, based on overall technical model, we're not convinced sell signal remains. Look at the last 2 days. Why? We have no idea. But we look at daily cycles, weekly, monthly. We look at our target algorithm, which is based on quantum physics, which you and I can talk about, but we shouldn't because everyone will switch off the station. But it really is the reason that markets move and not based on anything else, according to us.
When you're talking about quantum mechanics with regard to the market, are we talking about the fractal nature, meaning from tick to tick, minute to minute, the patterns that persist within the fractal structure of the markets? How does that, other than maybe chaos theory, how does it tie into the markets or into your analysis of the markets?
What we're saying is the markets, right? Mm-hmm. Quote unquote, the markets is nothing but a set of human emotion being basically a volleyball game back and forth, right? And they're voting. IBM up, IBM down, Apple up, Apple down. We think Apple is a big bottom in 2 months. Let me read you Sunday's report. All your listeners, by the way, please can write in and get free sample for a month. Monday, Wednesday, Friday, get the update. Sunday, we do a lot of charts. Let me tell you what we wrote. Boom, fast. Alcoa, we're long. We're comfortable being long Alcoa. Apple, although the particular chart we sent doesn't show it, longer-term cycles show a big bottom February 2016. IBM, based on longer-term cycles, it'll take a while, a long time, till it goes back in a buy signal. Ford cycles don't look bad. Short-term could be weakness. Don't be long. Exxon needs patience. It will be cheap, but no low until middle of next year. DuPont, investors who didn't close their long position, we did very well on DuPont. We don't know why it went up. It just was bottoming, right? Should keep a sell stop below 66. India's not good until March. Banking index, BKX, still has time to reach 78, but if it's below 74, it cancels. So even if cycles are up, we still look at the target. VIXs are holding around the break line. 30-year bonds could be lower till the end of the year. They could reach 150. We consider the time then, the 150 level, end of the year, to be the good risk point to go in. So we believe in level and target. Euro, which we called from 111, we said it would head towards 103, which it did. Short term's up for another week. It's trying to get back to the trend. And longer term, we expect to see euro trade 130 by a year and a half. But it's going to be a wild ride. Our conviction will be stronger once the MACD trigger a buy signal. And the euro, I'll just say this, you know, that we called it at 151 before the first Greek crisis, then it went down to 122 and 118, and why, we had no idea. And I'm not being modest, because we're not always right with this stuff, but that's, so we're basically saying no matter what it is, stock, bond, commodity, currency, or economic indicator, if we have enough math that we can create cycles, which are top to tops, and combine them, and if you see 30 cycles all topping this week, must be a top. Why? I have no idea. That's, in essence, our system. It took 10 seconds to explain 50,000 lines of code to execute. The guy yesterday, Chris, was telling me, how many tops define a cycle? I said, that's a very good question. Every situation's different. Because maybe we don't find so many tops in Alcoa. And maybe we find a lot more in IBM. I don't know what the voting pattern is in every group. It's not like one is always the same. It's not the 9-year Ugler cycle, which is, you know, a fascinating cycle, as you know, and I know most people don't know what that is. So we're doing a lot of complicated math trying to combine it, and if it all lines up, we feel very confident. And that's kind of what our product is. And, you know, it seems to work. We're in business 15 years. You know, we have a very high retention rate, and, you know, we're not always right. I mean, I'm happy to say that because humans wrote it. Humans are going to be wrong. But we put tight stops, so at least if you're down, like NatGas, we haven't been good with NatGas. We were great for a while. NatGas is called the Widowmaker for a reason. It's hard to trade, hard to play. And, you know, but we called the gold top. It's been a tough bottom, you know, over the last several years. I know people have said, there were times Charles said it'd be a bottom. It looked it. Okay, we say buy. Crude. I was on Canadian station a few months ago. It looked like it's going to 70 as long as it doesn't close above 41 or 42. Which it didn't. So the 70 target, do I still see 70? Yeah. We call a crude top at 97 a year and change ago. Absolutely. And I don't know, you weren't watching this stuff. Then it went down to 60-something, and I said go to 40, and it hit 40. Do we think it's going to go back up? Yes.
Now, see, this is interesting because my work has been screaming for 20 for 6 months.
We don't see 20, just so you know. That doesn't mean we're right, but I'm just saying cycle supported move over 135 for the dollar Canadian. 136.20 has to close above that, but we don't see it now yet. How about Alcoa? What are the targets? It could be a little early, 850, maybe 9960. Is platinum a buy signal? We have platinum clients. What are the targets? Dailies are down till Christmas. bounce to 900 is possible. If it closes above it, it cancels the sell signal. So,
I love technicals. It's my first passion. I like to bring in the story. And what concerns me here is the Fed Funds futures contracts are indicating a slam dunk on a quarter point, 25 basis points increase in a couple of weeks of the Fed meeting. I guess not even a couple of weeks now. And I guess next week, Wednesday or Thursday, see 100 basis points increase over the next 12 months. And in that type of environment, you can be certain that the greenback is going to find strength because Europe and Japan, at the very least, money is going to be pouring in because their rates are going negative just as ours are going up. That's like a reverse carry trade. And I know you're thinking, well, the markets may have already, you know, they're forward looking. They've discounted this 6 months from now. That could be true.
We agree. We haven't had a discussion. I agree. We agree. But it doesn't mean it's staying there. We still think this is just a shorter term move up, but we see a definite 750, 800 possibility. But look, back up the truck at some point, as is back up the truck on crude. So this is, you know, I have a lot of Canadians and Australians that didn't listen to us when we said get out of crude in high 90s and get out of gold in 1900, 4 years ago, right? What do you want? You know, look, I'm from the Bronx, so I understand stubborn. But nonetheless, you know, I have a lot of Canadian clients and friends. My parents married in Canada. I go to Canada a lot. And so I talk to them, especially the ones out west. You know, out west, the Canadian provinces had a huge budget surplus. Now it's not. They're coming in, you know, they're hurting, and they didn't get out, and the currency is so tied to the commodity. They're hurting right now, and they have to make decisions based on that. I do believe down the road both will go up, but it's not going to happen today. So they're making you feel hamstrung. But having said that, like you were just saying, the dollar. Let's talk about the dollar, okay? Because we cover the dollar in the form of the yen, the Aussie, the Canadian, and the euro yen every day. That's how we write about the dollar. We have called dollar strength for all these years. We were right. We believe it's going to top, and we believe it's going to turn the other way. Why? Don't know. Now, you could take your argument, A implies B, we're the ones raising rates, everyone's going negative, why wouldn't money flow in? No question, you're right, but let's look at the last 60 years, right? 30 years ago, I said this is 32 years ago, 33 years ago, rates were 18%. 63 years ago, they were 2. Now they're 2, 1, whatever, 3. You know, that's a cycle. It has to go back up again. Rates have to go back up again. So does that mean that the dollar has to go strong because rates are up? Because, you know, the hip bone's connected to the thigh bone. Yes, but there's other bones connected to it. And we don't know how they all influence each other. That's why I go to a chiropractor. And we're not so sure all these logical pieces. Is we think the dollar's going to hit a wall at some point, regardless of this rate thing, and it's going to turn the other way.
The markets could very well have already discounted, you know, the upcoming 2016 rate hikes we're going to see by the Fed. And if that's the case, then this impressive rally we've seen over the last 16 months in the greenback will hit a brick wall.
There were a lot of news. Charles wrote this on the economic front last week. We're sending an update, although nothing's changed in our outlook. We still feel there'll be a Fed rate hike. According to our cycles, this won't end well since we see the economy weakening next year. Therefore, as mentioned above, we're happy to be largely out of the market for the whole year. Okay, and we did get out of S&P 2120. And he said on CNBC a while ago that for the next 2 years, the S&P won't go up more than 5%, and then major top 2017.
What's interesting about that is we just had Louis Navalier on the show. He's one of the fundamental guys. His track record is really, it's uncanny. I mean, he's been on the show for a decade, and he just always gets it right. And he completely concurs with everything you just said.
You should introduce me to him because let me keep going. The EEM continues to be bearish. Brazil looks bad. ECB continues to do quote unquote whatever it takes. However, next year will be a different story. Now, from time to time, we recommend certain stocks such as Alcoa, right, which we are now. These are exceptions. We prefer to be safe. Bonds will be better, especially by year end. We expect a new bull move in crude, which will affect spending. Okay? There you go. ADD special, because we also know people have no attention span. Charles used to write this daily with 6 charts at Goldman. Guy was working for said, Charles, what do you think? Just for Goldman, we have attention span? Make it 3 times a week. And that's what we did. Yeah, this was a while ago. So I'd love to, number one, meet this gentleman. But number two, that's why we look at the A implies B logic that everyone talks about. And we say it could be, but we don't think that's what's running everything. That's pretty much the difference between us and other people. We think the past patterns are determining the future, And look, war. Let's talk about war. Very pleasant topic, right? There has been, and your listeners should write in, and I'll send it to them, or have someone send it to them. There's been a major war. Charles said this 4 years ago on some show, and nobody listened. They just went right past it. There's been a major war in the second decade of every century for the last 20 centuries. Let's go back. Now, listen. 100 years ago, if I'm organized enough, do I have it somewhere, you know?
Oh, sure. We had the Napoleonic War and the War of 1812 run around the 18th.
There you go. Let me read it to you. Ready? You sitting back? Let's talk. Nice topic. War.
Okay. What is it good for?
That's a good song title. That was a great song. World War I, 1914. 1812, I think there was Napoleon, you know? 1713, Spanish War, right? 1618, 30-year war in Europe. 1517, Martin Luther starts the Reformation. 1415, let's go back 100 years before. 1415, Battle of Agincourt, part of a 100 years war. English beat the French in 1509. Polish-Moldavian War. Ready? 1320. I hope people are listening. Byzantine Civil War, 1202 to 1214, Anglo-French. 1109, Battle of Glocko, Poland. 1013, the Vikings. I thought they were in Minnesota. The Vikings attack England.
You skipped the Norman invasion.
Yeah, the Norman was 11-something.
No,
right?
It's 1066.
Okay. Yeah, right, yeah, 1066 Norman conquest of Britain. But, by the way, this is not the only wars. It just happens every 100 years. It's not like people sit around drinking, you know, pina coladas between this. It was mead. It was right. 1109, Battle of Glocko. 1013, Vikings attack England. 907, Russian Byzantine War. Yeah. Ready? 814, okay, 711, invasion under Tariq of the Iberian Peninsula. 618, China collapsed, Sui Dynasty. 526, okay, was in the second decade. The Iberian Wars, Justinian Dynasty starts. 410, the Goths attacked Rome. 320, civil wars of Tetrarchy and the Roman Empire, and 208 to 210, Roman Severan invasion of Caledonia.
Yeah, and don't forget, nonstop blood feud with North Africa, with Hannibal and Hamilcar.
Right, exactly. Well, that, you know, like I said, people had to stay busy between these 100. Right, yeah, they had to do something, right? So anyway, this is, where's gold going to be? Higher. Where's crude going to be? Higher. Where's the ags going to be? We haven't talked about the ags, but we think the ags will be bottoming sometime next year and going up. We see Caterpillar bottoming sometime next year going up, right? Why? No idea. But that's how we think. We look at the math. People say you technical whatever. And I'll say if the technical's right, maybe it's fundamental whatever. And that's kind of what we advise people, to think that way rather than what the news is saying, because we don't really hold by them. Stephen Leeb's another story. He's a brilliant guy. And I think Q1's going to be a bit of a mess for stocks, okay? Most managers had a terrible year this year if they weren't trading Amazon or Facebook or Yelp or Priceline, as we know. What can I say? It's not going to be so pleasant, but it's not crashing yet, according to us. Got another year and a half of just like a battle. And then it's bad till the end of the decade. Bad. Like, stocks will be bad. Bonds will be bad. So now here, I was saying before, last 30 years, you know, bonds have gone up, right, because rates have come down. So if you bought bonds 1981, I say this a lot, but it's worth repeating, rates are 18%. Now they're 2%. That's a great trade, because if you own an 18% bond, assuming you still do, how much would someone pay you for that? A lot, being that rates are 2% now. Stocks since the 80s, well, you got to remember, 66 to 82, the Dow was 1,000, and the Dow's been up, you know, a lot since 82. It's up 18 times. But nonetheless, it was flat for 15 years. I have some guys who were clients, remember? It was flat for 15 years. Imagine now if it's flat for 15 weeks, they can't handle it. Right? ADD world. So it went up 60, you know, to 82. I remember I got out of business school. I was in business school. That's when the Dow started. And then it had its run to 87, got beat up. Back up to 94, semi-beat up. Up to 2000, beat up. 2007, beat up. It didn't really get beat up yet, you know, since then. So this 7-8 year return, it's been a pretty good run the last 5 years. And then the next decade looks great. But that's kind of the big picture, and That's it.
Give us some takeaway points here.
Again, being that I'm talking stocks, bonds, commodities, currencies based on no reason why things go, your listeners should write to the site and sample or research for a month and see if they like it, because they'll see this on a daily basis. Let me add to currencies. Just, we think about this stuff because the currency market, Americans don't like currencies.
Well, it's a $3 trillion market. It's the most important market in the world.
So anyway, we said the other day, Bunds, German Bunds, which are bonds, but from Germany, pretty big market. But anyway, in 1 week, the euro reaches its projected cycle high. Buy signal remains as long as there's no close below 107.35. The Aussie reached the first target of 72.70. Buy signal continues as long as no close below 71.80. The next target, 74.40. Canadian yen, euro yen. So what I'm saying is we are saying all these categories follow the same patterns, and we use the same analysis tools for that. I think people should look at it and see, because it seems to work. I don't know why. We're still in business. We have enough people saying yes, they don't throw us out. That's number one. That's easy and simple. We're not always right, and when we're wrong, we know fast, so we get out. We don't like 35% down moves. If it goes, well, unless we're short, we like 30% down moves, but we put in tight stops. So that's how people could sleep at night. Okay, number one. Number two, so stocks, I kind of gave you a big picture. It's not really crashing for a year and a half, but it's not going to go up much. And it's going to be not so pretty Q1 and bigger bottoms towards the end of Q1 on a bunch of stuff. Bonds, longer term bad, because rates are going to go back up for the next long period of time. But it's a good buy, we think, when it hits those levels I mentioned before in the timing. Gold, good to be long now. GLD, Newmont, we gave those things. People can write in and see. Is it longer term? Yes, but it should it get beat up before? Yes. Same with silver, right? Same with platinum. And then currencies, we do think dollar will eventually not be so strong, even though the logic of rates and other things imply the opposite. I hope that helps. As I get older, I'm getting better at saying it fast. Maybe I don't have the attention span anymore, you know? And we have lots of clients, and everybody, you know, they don't yell at us too much, so I'm happy. I edit the research. So I spend a lot of time. It's 4 minutes to read and hours to write.
And it has all the charts. So if you're like the rest of us, the synopsis, you can take, you know, just a quick look at the analysis and the charts and move on and make an educated decision.
The charts we just send on Sunday, we don't do during the week. Charts are generally cycle charts, used generally weekly based on weekly data. There are daily cycles, weekly cycles, monthly cycles, yearly cycles, quarterly cycles. We look at all that stuff. And sometimes short term's up and long term's down. So you're going to get pulled in both ways, like being in the water, you know. And that's every cycle has its say. And we're just trying to balance them. And sometimes, very often, I'd say most of the time, best to stay out on a lot of stuff, which is also hard in a world you sit at the screen, you can click, and you could do so fast, and you're all alone, and you're overwhelmed by information, and then you get news, this group's getting shot up, this is happening, that's happening. So people are frozen, you know, in their thinking of overwhelmed information. It's hard to think straight. Like we're talking about, certain people are tremendous thinkers. I'm just able to find people that are. Chris, always a pleasure to chat with you.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Welcome back.
It's good to be here.
Start off today with the U.S. equities markets this year. You called for a bottom, I think it was, a few months ago, and we've certainly seen that.
Well, I think it's just, to be honest with you, it's just seasonality. Markets are seasonally weak in the late summertime. We had a correction in August. Let's just, for lack of a better word, call that the summer shenanigans. We try to retest those lows multiple times. And now we're finally in the seasonally strong time of year. Markets tend to firm up late in the year and in the new year. A lot of that has to do with the pension funding late in the year and more pension funding in the new year. We really have some really bad leadership. And I'll give you an example. In October, the energy stocks were leading the way, the ConocoPhillips, the Occidental Petroleums. These are all stocks with very high dividend yields. Looks like people were buying dividend ETFs, not looking at where the dividends were coming from. So we think that was a short covering rally. Then in November, you had a lot of froth, Netflix, Amazon, very high-priced stocks, very high PE stocks with ridiculous multiples. And so that was a little scary. And then in December, we've seen the creme de creme rise. We've seen things with good sales and earnings be rewarded, like a Kroger, a Costco, a Palo Alto Networks. So that makes us feel really good. AutoZone just came out today with some good results. So that helps a lot. But we're in a shockingly narrow market, and we have very strong currency. The dollar is amazingly strong, and it's about going to continue to destroy corporate profits. S&P sales have been negative all this year. They'll be negative in the fourth quarter. Earnings were negative in the third quarter. They'll be negative in the fourth quarter. There are a lot of stock buybacks, so the first two quarters earnings were positive. But it's a pretty narrow market environment. Oh, and manufacturing's in a recession. Even though we got a strong auto sector, and it's just a strong dollar destroying the Caterpillars and other exporters. So, and the commodity prices are down, so that hurts our exports of ag and energy. It's a very narrow market environment. We're telling people they got to be in the top 11% of the dividend stocks and top 14% of other stocks.
So you talk about a strong dollar and weak commodities. So that's going to hurt S&P 500, right? Because our energy sector has certainly been under pressure for the better part of 12 months now. And I think you may have seen today that crude oil dropped well below 40. I think it was 37 and changed. Plus, you talk about the greenback strengthening. And you really wonder, is it really the greenback strengthening or is it, you know, the euro weakening and the yen weakening? I mean, obviously, their money presses have been running around the clock just as we're preparing for at least a quarter point rate hike with what about 80% odds now in the next couple of weeks. In other words, will we see new highs in the S&P 500 in 2016?
You may, but it'll be a seasonal blip. The strength of the S&P is it yields over 2.1%. It is tax advantage at 23.8. That's the max federal tax on qualified dividends. My fear is that some of the big dividend stocks will cut the dividend. Then that party's over. My other fear is the economy's just not balanced. But what's causing this strong currency is, as you mentioned, it's excessive money pumping by the Bank of Japan and the European Central Bank. And not only is there money pumping, they got negative rates. Apparently, when you issue too much debt, you can't pay interest, so you have to have negative rates. So Europe just lowered their rates to minus 0.3%. It's making foreigners pour into America, buy, you know, our real estate. They're buying collector cars. They're buying art. I mean, negative rates really freak people out, and that's what's freaking Europe out. And we have positive rates over here. And so what's happening is money's just flowing here, chasing our stronger economy and our higher rates. But in the end, it's going to undermine our Fed policy and put downward pressure on everything. And finally, the strong dollar pushes commodity prices down. You know, we really have a deflationary environment here. The Fed keeps saying inflation is going to materialize. I mean, the Fed can't find the barn, let alone hit the broad side of the barn on their inflation forecasts. But they are going to raise rates in December. It's called normalization. They want to have a tool down the road. And so that's fine. Market rates have since gone up, so that's not a big deal. The Fed will not be raising rates at all in 2016. It's the more they raise rates, the more that wealth gap in America gets wider and wider, and they don't want to be part of the political debate.
Then you're really not as rosy, the outlook at least.
The strength that we're going to have next year is the election cycle. You can't become president of the United States unless you're a happy, positive person. We'll have fewer candidates soon, and they'll all run around sucking up to each other. And I realize we might have a national security theme, so there'll be more fear. But normally elections are good for the market because they all run around and tell everybody what they want to hear. And then we elect somebody and say, why did we elect that person? Okay. So if history repeats, 2016 will be a positive year. But the truth of the matter is the dollar is really doing a number on our economy. You know, 48% of the S&P sales are outside of America. There's one other thing I should mention, and again, I'm a positive person, I'm not a negative person. The big news wasn't the correction we had in the late summer. The big news is what happened to the ETF industry. You see, on August 20, well, first, a couple things happened to the ETF industry. First, in early August, Stanford, UCLA, it said ETFs are more expensive to buy and sell in stocks. And that surprised a lot of people because a lot of people didn't realize they were paying spreads to specialists on the exchange to buy and sell their ETFs. But, you know, when they're reasonable, no one cares. But on August 24th, something really bad happened. A lot of big ETFs traded at a 30% discount to the underlying basket of stocks. And these weren't just any ETF. This was the iShares Dividend ETF. That's DVY. That's the Guggenheim S&P Equal ETF, over $10 billion. That was big Vanguard sector ETFs. And then everybody's saying, what do you mean by ETF trades at a discount like a closed-end fund? Not only that, they can trade at premiums. And a lot of ETFs had a 40% range August 24th. So the SEC is going to have hearings next year exposing all this. And what a lot of investors don't realize is ETFs are a transaction model. They get rewarded by their turnover. So when you buy an equally weighted ETF, they're rebalancing that every 90 days. And their specialist affiliate might, you know, have 240, 320% of your turnover, and they might make 4% just trading your stocks. Wall Street has invented something called robo-advisors, where there's no management fee. That's true. But if you read the disclosure, the ETFs are paying $250,000 a year to be in these programs. Why? Because they make money on the rebalancing. So it's all being exposed now that the ETFs were just a way to trick people to get paid under the table. And it's not funny anymore. You know, and it's hit the SEC, and it's hit iShares, Vanguard, S&P type ETFs. And this is bad for the market's credibility because this is 40% of the volume out there. I don't know how serious these ETF hearings will be by the SEC.
What is going to be as appealing as equities? Because you earn so little money at the bank, as you mentioned, negative rates in Europe, but there's very little alternative as far as rates are concerned out there. You have a pretty solid dividend coming from the S&P 500. What alternatives will be available?
You know, even though I'm a stock guy, I have a $2 billion a year bond business. We buy bonds and sell them to banks and brokerage firms, and we do them in UITs. That's a good way to buy bonds because you don't have any, you know, what we call transaction risk. Your danger is if you buy bonds in an ETF or a mutual fund and get hit with redemptions, they could be forced to sell when no one's around, and bonds have spreads, and it could really do a number on the return. So bonds are meant to be bought ladder to hold to maturity, and so we have a big business doing that. The only problem is I get about a 4.6% yield in triple B corporates, but it's fully taxed at 43.4%. So for people in higher tax brackets, we do think dividends are better, and we have multiple dividend management programs. But the best one, in my opinion, is something called Power Dividend, where we double the dividends every 6 to 7 years. The companies are doubling the dividends, so you get a good dividend return plus growth. And these would be stocks like a Clorox, a Lockheed Martin. So you only get about a 3.3% dividend yield, a tax advantage of 23.8%, but then you have capital appreciation potential. What I especially like about it, when the markets got very nervous, this thing got firmed up. So we like to mix our Power Dividend portfolio with our conservative growth portfolios. You know, in our normal large cap growth portfolio, you know, I have 12% sales growth next quarter. I'm going to have over 20% earnings growth. S&P is going to be negative. I'm only trading at barely 16 times forecasted earnings. So I have good sales and earnings, but the market doesn't. So, you know, I still think my quality growth stocks will remain an oasis. I do have to be more domestic now to get away from all the problems with the multinationals. And so, you know, domestic is like a Kroger or a Southwest Airlines. God, we got lots of retail. It's Ultra Salon Fragrances, Lowe's, Home Depot, Costco would be another one. You know, so I have to be more domestic. And so we like to mix our conservative growth stocks with the dividend, with the powerful dividend stocks. And I think that's a good 1-2 punch and blend it together that will give people a pretty steady return. But it is very, very scary out there to be an investor nowadays. It's Wall Street's under scrutiny because of the ETF pricing scandals this year. There's going to be regulatory investigations. The best thing about the market is the dividend yield and the buybacks. That should continue next year.
Let's say 3 to 5 years from now, will we see the Dow up another 50, 100%, or should people be manning the life rafts?
Well, I think people are losing confidence in the central banks. So I think, you know, they might want to up their gold allocation. If you're in Europe and you bought some gold, you made money. But if you bought it in America, you're just treading water. So the weaker your central bank, the weaker your currency, the more you want to own gold. Let's say you have a 6% gold allocation. Maybe you want to take it to 6 to 9%. So that's one safety valve. I think the other safety valve is just having your best defense, strong offense, having very good companies. America's going to be fine long term because we have foreign capital pouring in here. We have a lot of people with money coming to America, and we just have to cheer up. And we're a more optimistic society, but we have to remain happy and go out and spend money. And there's something called the velocity of money, how fast money changes hands. And hopefully we'll have that moving forward. It's you know, we've had a very divisive society, and it's just time for everybody to cheer up and try to make the country better. And we have a lot of wealthy immigrants coming in, whether it's the Chinese immigrants, the European, Russian immigrants. You know, in America, you get assimilated and you prosper. So, but that capital pour in America is a big deal. So I'm not worried at all. I think we'll be fine. It's just I want to be in wherever the strength is. You know, I'm a manager, and I have to have earnings every quarter. So as long as I have earnings, I'll be happy. That silver lining oasis is very, very clear out there. But there are bubbles out there. You know, I won't buy an Amazon at 965 times earnings. I will buy a Gilead, a big company, at 9 times earnings. I have growth at a reasonable price versus growth at a bubble price.
I'm sure you'll agree that real estate has been moving nearly in lockstep with the U.S. equities markets now for several years. Do you see any signs of a top for the typical median home price in the U.S.?
You know, I have some home builders in the portfolios. And I have home builders because there's tight inventory out there. So I'm not too worried about that. You know, the financing still is going to be pretty lucrative. Financials institutions are actually one of the areas of growth right now. So I'm not too worried about that. And that is a big part of consumer sentiment, is having home prices go up. So, and consumers have largely been happy because their wages are finally starting to go up. That's one reason the Fed's going to raise rates. Their homes are steadily appreciating, and now they got more money in their pocket because of lower gas prices. So, you know, we're getting there. It's just not a balanced economy right now. Obviously, if you live in Texas, Louisiana, Oklahoma, there's a problem in the energy patch. If you live in Peoria, there's a problem with Caterpillar, you know, because of the strong dollar. I could say the same thing about parts of Wisconsin that have a lot of manufacturing and exports. Same thing Cleveland, where all the steel pipe comes from. So, you know, we're just not hitting on all cylinders right now. You know, overall, you know, we're going to be growing.
And you also mentioned that the gold market, you know, after several difficult years here, might be a buying opportunity. And we've also seen the precious metal sector perk up substantially in the last few weeks. Do you see this as a potential theme or trend?
I think it's a trend because we go into the holidays and a lot of people want to give their kids gold coins and things like that. As you know, there's a gold coin shortage out there, so the demand exceeds the supply. But I think and you know, you have the Indian wedding season and a lot of cultural things going on. But I think as rates get more and more negative, if I lived in Europe, if I lived in Japan, I'd be having a lot of metals right now, just because I don't have confidence in putting my money in the bank and having a negative yield. So it really does undermine things. Gold is a cultural monetary tool. It's been around for thousands of years, and I think when times get uncertain, people gravitate towards it. And so I think this price should be very firm. Of all the commodities, that is the firmest out there right now.
Certainly suffered substantially, and many of the other commodities seem to be making up for lost time, and crude oil as well. Any final thoughts then on black gold? Do you see as low as $20 a barrel for West Texas intermediate crude?
I hope not, but I will tell you that oil is seasonal. It goes down the fall. We're in the fall now, so the demand's low, and then it goes up in the spring. So we're always going to have these gyrations. But what's really freaking oil out is they didn't cap the wells in America like everybody expected. And there's no reason to cap. It's on leased land. It only costs $5 to $15 to get out of the ground. The only place that's expensive is North Dakota because of transportation costs. So if anything gets capped, it'll be there. We have a huge Gulf production coming on from the majors next year. So the glut's going to get bigger. The limits are off on OPEC, so they're pumping more than ever. So it's really gotten to be very, very interesting out there. I do expect gold to go up in the spring, but I mean not gold, but oil to go up in the spring. But I seasonal demand picks up, but it's like this year we're making a new low, 7-year low, and I'm not sure our high next year is going to be as high as it was last year. So I think people just have to get used to this lower reduced range for a while. So it's a big dividend. But we don't want to see it take out certain parts of our economy in certain regions and states.
You'd agree there's a dollar component factor at play here as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The stronger the dollar gets, the more any commodity goes down in price. Again, gold's been the most resilient, but you know the price of wheat, corn, soybeans, food, it all goes lower as the dollar goes higher and higher. It's actually helped India. India spends a lot of money on food and energy, and they spend less, so they got more disposable income. That's why they're the strongest economy in the world right now. But it's very interesting. The other thing we've got to watch is China. You know, China's not exporting what they used to. There's a lot of concerns around the world, and then we have to watch all this terror stuff. If the terror stuff hurts travel and commerce, then there goes the economic growth. I don't think we're quite there yet. You want to make sure this doesn't spread, and hopefully we'll get a handle on that. That's just another wild card out there.
Please tell folks more about Navalier & Associates as well as any other services you'd like to outline today.
Well, our big thing is have free databases in the public domain. We have a dividend grader and the top 11% of the best. We have a stock grader. Wrote a book on that. We grade stocks A, B, C, D, F, top 14% of the best. We have an ETF grader, grade ETFs. So we give a lot of our research free in the public domain. We have a free service called Market Mail. And that's all at Navalier.com, and then NavalierGrowth.com is my newsletter site if you want to get my newsletters. And there's free databases on that site, too.
Well, as Gold Seek Radio is wrapping up our 10th year here, I want to wish you a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and Happy Holidays, and look forward to having you on back on the show in 2016.
Thanks. Take care.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of Gold Seek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
Gold Seek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of Gold Seek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
Gold Seek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Hey Chris, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. I was perusing some of my earliest Goldseek commentaries from 2008 and 2009, and noticed a number of discussions on infrastructure. It didn't take a trained eye then, and it certainly doesn't now, to see that brand new infrastructure is, was, and has been growing in the East, and old infrastructure that is 40, 50, 60, and 70 years old is, was, and has been crumbling in the West. Renewal is needed, and it has been discussed in many ways. In my December 9th, 2008 Goldseek commentary, I said, I believe last weekend the groundwork was officially laid for such an occurrence by President-elect Barack Obama when he announced his plans for a massive infrastructure program in the United States. For starters, he's talking $1 trillion of stimulus. Federal infrastructure programs require massive amounts of commodities. As other countries around the world gear up for their own infrastructure stimulus, where do you think the price of base metals and raw materials will be 12 months from now? Well, it's 7 years later. Commodities are still being slammed, and infrastructure is, for the most part, still on the drawing board, still being debated. However, in June this year, McKinsey Global Institute released a report called The Internet of Things, Mapping the Value Beyond the Hype, where they have forecast the world will be significantly interconnected via the Internet by 2025. Forbes defines the Internet of Things, better known as IoT, as connecting any device with an on-off switch to the Internet and or to each other. The IoT is a giant network of connected things, which also includes people. The relationship will be between people and people, people and things and things. Cities, vehicles, homes, offices, factories, work sites, retail, health, logistics, all of these spell infrastructure. I believe the sectors, trends, and developments discussed in this report represent an infrastructure roadmap that will drive not just the market, but ultimately government policy over the next decade and beyond in the United States and globally. In fact, by 2025, it is estimated the per annum economic impact of IoT. And remember, the T is largely infrastructure. The global economic impact will be from 3.9 to 11.1 trillion dollars per year. That's a lot of change, a lot of infrastructure, a lot of quantitative easing. Infrastructure by itself sounds like a boring, old school public works program. But when that infrastructure is built with the latest technology and connectivity, already built in for the long haul into the future, it becomes a driving force that will be implemented as today's millennial generation starts to become middle-aged. Markets will drive much of this change. Governments around the world will subsidize the rest. QE will have nine lives. That's the model for now, subject to change. Infrastructure was promised this past decade. It will be delivered upon this next decade. And until next time, this is Robert Ian, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at Conquer Change. Thanks, Chris.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.